News Weekly is an ad-free listener-supported podcast made possible by listeners like you. Just go to patreon.com/Sammy Shah to support the podcast. Top stories of the week. Comedian destroys baby. Also, the Australian government discovers the internet. All that and more on News Weekly. Hello and welcome to News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly. Close the baby gate news now. It's been a busy couple of weeks for journalists in Australia, with so many stories calling into question so many ethical standards the news industry claims to aspire towards, but is increasingly falling short of. Whether that is the unrelenting footage of a knife-wielding psychopath roaming through a shopping mall, to falsely accusing an innocent man of being that knife-wielding psychopath, to then airing footage on loop of another stabbing, this time of a bishop. The critique has been made, I believe fairly, that Australian news media in its rush towards ratings has begun catering to nothing but culture wars and controversy. But at the same time, in the defense of that news media, it exists in a time when breaking news is constant. World events are piling up with the rapidity of soiled nappies in a house of octuplet toddlers, and sometimes there isn't enough time for considered and nuanced coverage of a major issue that might affect the country in heretofore unseen ways. Issues like this.
Well, comedian Arj Barker is facing intense backlash this morning after telling a breastfeeding mother to leave his show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival.
And a Melbourne mum says she was left feeling humiliated and intimidated after she and her seven-month-old baby were kicked out of a comedy show.
It's the story that rocked the nation's cradle. A mum with her baby went to a comedy show and then was asked to leave and offered a full refund when the baby was distracting the comedian and audience. Or a comedian threw a mum out of his comedy show because she was breastfeeding and comedians are anti-lactation. How can we ever know the truth? Luckily, the nation's greatest investigative journalists were on the case, speaking to both the comedian, Arj Barker.
So I made the decision not for myself, for the audience who wanted to see the show.
And they spoke to the mother of the baby.
You know, I was prepared to leave if I felt like she was impacting on other people. And it was more like how it went down, if you know what I mean. Like,
and then they even spoke to random strangers on the street in what can be called either vox pops or incitement.
I'm the mother of twins, so I wouldn't take my babies to a comedy show.
They can't understand what's getting said anyway.
Mothers should be able to go out and enjoy themselves and not feel that they have to stay at home because they've got a little one.
That's right. Mums should be allowed to take babies anywhere. Comedy shows, the opera, classical music concerts, even recordings of comedy podcasts. Shut up! Get out! You're ruining my art with your babiness! Channel 10's The Project was clearly and firmly on the side of the mum and her bub, giving her every opportunity to defend herself against the violent ejection.
Why did you decide to take bub?
Well, we just kind of booked the tickets like a month in advance, and at the time I didn't even really think too much about it, to be honest. But Clara is 100% breastfed. She doesn't take a bottle. I don't express well, so I don't even have milk to give her. She's never had formula. So there's really no other way she can eat unless she's with me. But the fact that he was just on the mic and just sort of, yeah, quite, it felt intimidating, but I was breastfeeding at the time, so, you know, you do feel a bit more vulnerable. And then he asked for support of the crowd to, like, basically say I should leave. And then we'll kind of also jeered out a little bit or heckled a little bit when we were leaving out by some of the crowd. So I think it's that which is the problem.
And that sounds difficult, to be humiliated by your favourite comedian like that so publicly. Except while the mum was giving her side of the story to Channel 10, Arj Barker was defending himself on Channel 9.
I have nothing against babies. I was a baby for nearly 2 years when I was really young. And then again, briefly in my mid-30s in Amsterdam, but that was a misunderstanding. Carl, I came on the show because I want to set the record straight on a couple things that are going around Number one, the breastfeeding thing is a non-issue. It should be inadmissible. I have no idea if she was breastfeeding or not because I'm on stage. For those that wouldn't know, when you're on a lit stage, seeing the audience is like looking into a dark room while someone shines a flashlight in your face. You can make out shapes, silhouettes. I could see there was likely a woman holding a baby. That's all I could see. The breastfeeding was never part of it. I didn't even hear about that until 2 days after this thing happened. So that was news to me, literally. But this was a quiet theater. This was a beautiful, quiet theater. You could hear a pin drop in there. And it's a theatrical show, and I'm trying to do my thing. And it wasn't about me. It was about the audience being able to have the immersion to enjoy the show and enjoy the rhythm and the pauses and the timing. And if you're trying to watch something and there's a noise over here or phone rings over there, it takes you out of it.
Yeah.
That's why I did it, Carl. It's the only reason I said the baby's going to disrupt the show, but it wasn't anything to do with me not being able to perform. Mm. It was to do with on behalf of the audience.
That should settle it. Of course. Bit of confusion, misunderstanding, move on. The media doing its best here. They got a mother to interview the mother, so there was empathy there. And then for Arj to create the same empathy, they got a dickhead to interview him.
Arj, it sounds like you need to get a lot off your chest. Hey, yeah. Listen, my man, because I think you're a great guy. And this kind of didn't sit well with me.
And so now we have a divided media narrative, with one side agreeing with the comedian's story and the other side agreeing with the mum's story. Unless it interferes with their own show.
I just thought it'd be really nice to do something that I hadn't done in a while. And just sort of get back to sort of a pre-baby me. Super cranky right now.
Okay, maybe she can go to dad just for a quick second.
And look, it's important at this point to remember that the narratives here are dueling. Mainly because, are you out of your fucking mind? How is this a news story? Why was this something that the entire nation was riveted by for not one but several days? I've had people with babies at my shows many times over the years. I've had my own baby at my show, and the parent with the baby always sits near the exit, not up front, right where it could be the most disruptive, and then when the baby starts making sounds, the parent leaves on their own, not when the comedian has to ask them to leave. That's how it works. If the baby was sitting at a performance of Romeo and Juliet and the baby started crying and she didn't leave, the audience would have complained. So why the hell isn't comedy given the same fucking benefit? And again, this didn't deserve primetime news coverage across the country on multiple shows for multiple days. There are so many other issues, like, I don't know, a woman is being violently killed in Australia every 4 days this year. And instead of talking about entrenched misogyny, the news outlets chose this proxy manner of addressing the issue that actually encourages bad faith debates, effectively sitting in the front of a room where something important is happening and making baby sounds until everyone gets distracted, except no one is here to ask them to leave. Australia's X News Now. Nothing unites people like hate, which is probably why Anthony Albanese is stealing a plot point from Alan Moore's Watchmen comic and giving us all a villain to unite against.
This arrogant billionaire who thinks he's above the law, but also above common decency.
Remember when last week there was a horrific knife attack in a shopping mall in Sydney, and for a brief moment everyone wondered if it was going to be Muslim terrorists? And then they discovered it was a psychopath who hates women, which might be confused with the Muslim terrorist, but this one wasn't Muslim. And everyone was horrified by what had happened, but also deep down a little relieved that this wasn't more Islamic extremist terrorism. And then, just to make sure we never catch a break from this reality, a Muslim extremist teenager stabbed a Christian bishop in the eye with a knife. Well, the footage of that knife attack got posted to social media, where it could appear in your feed alongside the footage of dead babies in Gaza, dead Israelis from October 7th, and AI-generated pictures of limbless veterans next to cakes that for some reason your grandparents keep commenting on.
Elon Musk's ex, formerly Twitter, was last night ordered in court to take down videos of the stabbing of Bishop Mahmari Emanuel in a Sydney church last week. He took to his own platform to push back.
Our concern is that if any country is allowed to censor content for all countries, which is what the Australian e-safety commissar is demanding, then what is to stop any country from controlling the entire internet?
Damn it, this is like Piers Morgan on Gaza again, isn't it? Now I have to agree with Elon Musk, because Musk is right. No one country should be able to decide what people in the rest of the world can and cannot see. Although Musk does think a country should be able to censor what its own citizens see, the way he's repeatedly censored critics of Turkey's president or India's prime minister whenever asked to do so.
Twitter and YouTube have censored a BBC documentary that was critical of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
He wants Elon Musk to censor certain content on Twitter on his behalf so people in Turkey don't see it. And it looks like Elon Musk has decided to oblige.
So why is Elon Musk refusing to take down the video, even though Australia is asking so politely?
He's carrying on like a narcissistic cowboy.
If that bloke had half a social conscience or even 10% of one, that stuff would be pulled out.
Have they thought about saying please? Why doesn't Elon Musk care about Australian users and their delicate sensibilities when compared with India and Turkey? Is it because Turkey has over 18 million Twitter users, India has 26 million Twitter users, and Australia has barely 3 million? Maybe it's because Elon Musk knows the internet is a lot larger than Twitter and the footage is there on multiple places for anyone to see it if they want, but the only reason politicians are obsessed with his platform is because they're on it. And the moment you put the footage of the bishop's eye getting stabbed on Pornhub, they might want it off there as well. Or is it because he knows that he's safe as long as he has free speech warriors like Senator Ralph Babbitt on his side?
Senator Ralph Babbitt posting the video on both X and Facebook.
To the Australian government and the eSafety Commissioner, go yourselves.
For now then, it seems if your kink is religiously motivated eye stabbings, you can still find them on Twitter. You just have to follow Ralph Babbitt to look at them. At least they're not using ChatGPT to write their protests. News now. One of the many ways the war in Gaza is reminiscent of the post 9/11 years is in how it's made its way to campus protests. Just as many of us marched in 2002 against the invasion of Afghanistan and then again in 2003 against the invasion of Iraq, students are now marching against the ongoing invasion of Gaza. And just like in 2002 and 2003, it'll have absolutely no impact whatsoever on any military decisions, but that's an important lesson students need to learn, that their activism is as well-meaning but impotent as a college freshman trying to maintain an erection after 13 beers. The latest round of protests began in some of America's top colleges.
Pro-Palestine protests, which have been causing chaos at Columbia University in New York, are continuing to spread to dozens of other prestigious campuses across the US.
Why do they never spread to shit campuses? How come polytechnic institutes never have these protests? No one is shutting down a TAFE to protest Gaza. Now look, these protesters are young, passionate students. Most of them will probably grow up to become cynical rich kids with high-end jobs that won't be enough to pay off ever-increasing mortgages. But for now, their idealism is healthy, if messy. The trick is to engage them calmly, maturely, to show them that free speech extends to all, and the right to protest is important and works best when coupled with engagement and reasoned debate.
Columbia University's president asked the NYPD to break up a tent encampment.
150 protesters were arrested at NYU in a demonstration. The university says it asked the police to intervene.
Chaos on the campus of USC as pro-Palestinian protesters clash with school security and police. LA police officers in riot gear move in, and there are a number of confrontations as the police force encircles the center of campus.
Officers were sent in at the request of the university and under the direction of Governor Greg Abbott.
Abbott posted a social media quote, "The protesters belong in jail.
Send in the National Guard and wake these kids up."
Well, that went Kent State a lot quicker than anticipated. One of the main criticisms about the protests is that they may claim to be anti-Israel, but they're threatening Jewish students and are more blatantly anti-Semitic. Which, look, that's a criticism that's often used to defend Israel. And it's important to remember that not all anti-Israeli statements are anti-Jewish states.
On Columbia's campus, Jewish students endured threats with calls to go back to Poland. Here, a demonstrator points at pro-Israel students while holding a sign that reads, "Al-Qassam's next targets." and a Jewish professor is denied entry to the campus while school officials look on.
Okay, maybe it's a bit anti-Semitic. And maybe when you see something like that, it lends credence to David Baddiel's argument in his book, Jews Don't Count.
Well, it's a book about the anti-racist, the identity politics conversation.
Yeah.
And about how in that conversation, which has intensified incredibly over the last 20 years, it seems to me that anti-Semitism, which is a very old racism, very old form of discrimination, is kind of very low in the mix of that. That it kind of feels like people aren't so bothered about it.
And look, that's hard to argue with when you hear protesters literally praising Hamas. But then, at the same time, you shouldn't blame everyone in a movement for the extreme views of a few of them. That's called collective punishment, and that's kind of how we've gotten here in the first place. But then again, there is that German saying that if 10 people are at a table and one of them is a Nazi and the other 9 don't leave, then there are 10 Nazis. Which I think is how German children are taught to count. 1 Nazi plus 9 non-Nazis equals 10 Nazis. But then again, it's confusing for people who do support the protests when they hear they're anti-Semitic, when they also hear things like this interview on ABC with Tessa Stewart, a member of Yale's Jews for Ceasefire, which is taking part in the campus protests.
And I think also part of it is that I feel it makes me really upset, makes me angry and sad that my Jewish identity is like the violence and the atrocities, the mass death that we're seeing in Palestine is in any way in the name of Jewish identity. That makes me feel even more of an obligation to do everything that I can.
And again, it's hard to see these protests as being reacted to fairly when you see police officers beating students on the news and the kind of footage the US State Department would condemn if it was happening in Venezuela or Pakistan or Russia. And you know this is getting out of control when Benjamin fucking Netanyahu takes time out of planning his next election victory to make a comment.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific.
I mean, horrific is an overstatement, perhaps. Horrific is the kind of thing I'd usually use to describe finding, I don't know, mass graves of zip-tied bodies under hospitals.
Gaza's Hamas-run civil emergency service says 310 bodies have been found in a mass grave at Khan Yunis's Al-Nasser Hospital. Two other graves had purportedly been identified, but not yet excavated. The UN Human Rights Office says it's trying to confirm reports from Palestinian officials that bodies were also recovered from Gaza City's Al-Shifa hospital site, following an Israeli special forces operation.
Victims had reportedly been buried deep in the ground and covered with waste. Among the deceased were allegedly older people, women, and wounded, while others were found tied with their hands. They were found with their hands tied and stripped of their clothes.
Now, it should be pointed out that there's no definitive evidence yet that the bodies were put there by Israel. The IDF claims it had dug up some graves to look for hostages, but they returned them to their original state because the IDF is known for taking such care and consideration with living Palestinians that why would they not extend the same courtesy to dead Palestinians? But before that, they did say they didn't dig up any graves at all, and then they said that they did kill some people, but they were all terrorists.
Who do you think those bodies are?
Probably terrorists, because the ratio of combatant to innocent that Israel has is unprecedented in modern warfare. We know we've killed about 15,000 terrorists. There was a terrible battle in those areas. So the chances are...
How do you think these people died?
In gun battles with Israel.
Why do you think some of the bodies were found with ties around their hands?
Well, because we probably arrested the terrorists.
And then killed them.
Well, I don't know if the terrorists fought back. I wasn't there.
And on top of that, Israel is still committed to its upcoming invasion of Rafah, while Hamas is still drip-feeding hostage videos.
Meanwhile, Hamas have released a video appearing to show an Israeli-American hostage, Hirsch Goldberg Polin, in captivity. The short, undated video showing the man in his early 20s missing his lower arm.
Now, that many people here are interpreting was precisely why this hostage video was released, was once again for Hamas to try and put some pressure back on the Israeli government, not just because that's what they want to do, but also maybe to say to the Israelis, look, these hostages are still alive. If you want to do a deal, let's talk. Let's see if we can get something agreed. Thus far, it's proved impossible.
So, Hamas releases hostage videos like there's some sort of smoke signal, but not the hostages themselves. And Israel continues to commit mass killings of civilians and says it didn't, then it turns out it did, then it says you're anti-Semitic if you say it did, and the protests keep filling with actual anti-Semitic terrorism enthusiasts who drown out the actual voices calling for peace, and the entire thing ends up meaning nothing except more dead children while everyone else gets to play good cop, bad protester, which means things aren't getting any better anytime soon, especially for poor Alec Baldwin.
You're putting innocent people in jail, Alec Baldwin. Free Palestine, Alec, just one time, and I'll leave you alone.
By noon Pacific time today, the viral confrontation posted by the videographer Crackhead Barney had more than 10 million views on Twitter and was a topic across all media.
You know, maybe this is why news outlets focus on distractions so much, because the real news is just too complicated. That's it for this week's edition of News Weekly. Apologies for taking a week off last week, but we are back on regularly scheduled programming right now. As always, you can support the podcast by heading over to iTunes, giving a 5-star rating and leaving a solid review for it, or just telling your friends and family and loved ones and neighbors and enemies and people you pass by on the street to listen to News Weekly, the greatest podcast you've ever heard. That's what I think it is anyway. And also, of course, you can join and subscribe to my Patreon. That's patreon.com/SamiShah, S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H, to support the podcast. Otherwise, I'll see you right back here next week on News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly.